Right, John, have you had your pre-lunch flapjack?
Yes.
Graham, have we recorded some silence?
Silence is recorded.
Excellent. Then we can fire up the quattro and get ready to rumble. This is Podcast Season 4, Episode 9. I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Ben Everard.
I'm Jonathan Roberts.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And in this episode, we'll be talking about lots of news. We'll have our discoveries of the week, halfway reminders, rants and raves. We'll be speaking our brains and... we'll be, oh dear me,
balloting our opens.
We're balloting our opens. If you would like to purchase a version of this on paper and slightly more professionally done, so not rushed in a 40-minute slot before lunchtime, you can do so by buying Linux Format. There's an excellent subscription offer at tinyurl.com/LXFoffer1. I say it every fortnight. We might as well do it again. That's for £59.99, 13 issues, which is a saving of around £84.50. Or if you pay every 3 months on a direct debit, it's cheaper. It's £51.92. So you do the maths.
And issue 159 goes on sale today.
Brilliant.
And it's on the Ubuntu Software Centre.
Cool.
As well as other digital places.
Ubuntu versus Windows, right?
That's right. Ubuntu versus Windows. Who shall win? Who knows?
Since we wrote it, I can take a guess.
It's probably... But how does it win?
That's the tension.
We're very objective. I mean, when we did a podcast roundup, we didn't win.
We didn't include it.
I was a bit annoyed by that.
Cool. So, time for the news. First story is Mint 13 is out.
Do you want my notes, John?
I used Dropbox and I synced it with my phone rather than printing, so that's cool.
If only there was Google Drive on your Linux box.
Yeah, that would have been good as well. But Abyssal works well, so if you've got an Android phone and you want to sync text notes and stuff, use Abyssal. But more interestingly, it's time for the news, and Mint 13 is out. Ben?
Yeah, I haven't actually fired it up. I just downloaded it this morning, but I had a go with the release candidate. And I guess the big news is that it's gone completely over to Cinnamon. And is it Mate or Mate?
I think it's Mate. There's no accent on the user.
It's not, but only because it's all caps. If you look in the About page on the project website, it does describe it as named after the plant that produces the Argentinian tea.
Yeah, Che Guevara used to like drinking.
Yeah, or every Argentinian. But they don't put the E in the name.
Because it got a silent G in it.
It doesn't have a silent G.
And they should add that just for effect, just to show its heritage.
Yeah.
Anyone else got any thoughts on Mint 13? Excited to try it, or
I'm looking forward to trying the new login manager.
Have they got a new login manager?
Yeah, apparently it's based on GDM, and it's got that's a display manager, isn't it?
Yeah.
But apparently it's got all sorts of features.
Because you're running Mint now.
I am running Mint.
I know you are, because I used the new Nmap yesterday to scan our local network and saw Andrew's Mint desktop. Come on, yeah.
Could you see what I was looking at?
No, I was too busy trying to hack into Ian's iPhone.
Cool, so Mint 13 is out. Go out, try it out. Based on Ubuntu 12.04, I guess. So all about long-term support, goodness, but without the long-term support.
It's only taken them 2 weeks. That's really good going, isn't
it?
Yeah. And the release candidate was only, seems like yesterday.
But brilliant.
I guess it was a bit longer.
Doing a little bit better on time-wise than some other major distributions we've released you about now.
I released you about 4 weeks ago.
So anyway, besides Mint, we've also found out that Chrome is the number one browser in the world, or is it?
Isn't this Microsoft who's contested this?
It is Microsoft who's contested.
I find that funny, considering their days are obviously numbered.
Yes. But it was a fair point that they brought up.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that so the story is that Chrome now has the most largest share of market on web browsers in the world, across the whole world. Different regions it varies, but worldwide. StatCounter said that Chrome is number one. Microsoft says that no, Chrome preloads search. When you search, Chrome preloads invisible tabs with the search results preloaded to make it faster to access them. And these will be getting counted by the stat counting websites. And they say when you take that away, Chrome actually is below Firefox on about 18%, Firefox second on about 20-something%, and then Internet Explorer. So completely changes the picture if you do take that into account.
That's very true, yeah.
Yeah.
I must admit, I was surprised.
What about Chrome?
Yeah, because I know a lot of us use it and a lot of geeks use it, but the masses out there, you know, my mum's, I'm always reluctant to mention her these days, my uncle uses Firefox. You know, and nearly everyone else I know who's kind of interested in slightly in security uses Firefox, and Chrome is just another step too far for them.
I mean, to me, I wasn't that surprised because, like, that same kind of audience, they search for every single site they visit through Google. They don't put in the address. And Google have prominently advertised it on and off again.
I just think that,
on their webpage. Yeah. And that's got to have a massive effect on how quickly, and not just on their webpage, but other sites as well. You see banner ads for Chrome, and Firefox just can't do that.
Yeah, but I just think it falls into the majority use where, you know, lots of people use Windows without caring about it. And lots of people use Firefox or Internet Explorer for the same reasons.
Yeah.
It's with people who are interested, definitely Chrome.
I use Firefox and I'm interested.
But I switched between them. I mean, as I said a couple of episodes ago, I switched to Qt Web. But
It's just a shame that the superb Google Doodle of the Moog synthesizer didn't work on Chrome.
Yeah, it didn't work on Chrome. I thought that was
Google's doodle on Google's own web browser.
You know, I went into it with the Firefox, and it said upgrade to Chrome to get this to work.
Ah,
did it?
Weird world. It worked on Firefox for me.
Maybe it was Chrome on Linux.
True, I didn't try it on anything else.
Mm. Anyway, also in Google-related news, the patent case with Oracle has come to an end, and Google won.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, no offer got thrown out of court and told that no patent infringement has happened here.
That is brilliant. I didn't know this until I actually saw it written down in the notes. I just have been too busy.
So, and that, along with the other part of the case, was a copyright infringement claim on the APIs.
Yeah.
And the jury were mixed on that. They said that there was infringement, but they weren't prepared to rule on fair use.
Yeah.
So waiting for the judge's decision on that. But
and is in terms of scale of what was originally threatened by Oracle, even that is
tiny. The patent bit was the major part, because that could have seen Android blocked from distribution in the States. And
I mean, I'm not terribly bothered about Google winning this. I'm just really glad Oracle has lost, because I think it says to Oracle, no, you can't, just because you bought Sun mainly for what appears to be its patent for portfolio, doesn't mean you can muscle in on everybody's business.
Yeah, no, exactly. And just generally for the rest of the landscape as well, to see patent cases like this get shot down, I think it's really good news.
So I think the copyright case was bigger news on that, or will be bigger news when it ever gets settled, because the knock-on effects of claiming you can copyright an API is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, both are very important cases. Yeah. So, but this is at least some good news in the whole mad legal world of software patents and intellectual property.
Especially from the US.
Yeah, especially from the US, where nothing ever makes sense. Mandriva is now a community concern.
You say that that's a good thing.
I kind of think maybe it is.
I think
is.
It's like fallen out the bottom of the barrel.
It's like the last resource thing. Of a failed. Mm. But then again, you look at what happened to LibreOffice when it got split out.
Yeah, but that was hard. That wasn't the same kind of situation where a community took over it, because, I mean, Mageia is the closest thing to LibreOffice. Mm. This is a kind of, it's open source, we can't do anything about it. Here you are, here's our last press release, it's free. So, I remember Sun doing similar things.
That's why it's a good thing that it's happened.
It's a good thing that open source protects people using stuff so that they can continue stuff, but yeah.
Do you think this is going to head to Mageia getting more?
I think it should do, because I don't think there's...
The focus will go for Mandriva.
Mandriva being a commercial product is a good idea, and you know, I hope they do well out of it. But two community-driven distributions that are so similar, I think they should concentrate on Mageia.
Well, there's three now. There's Rosa as well.
Oh, yeah, the Russian one.
Yeah.
And what's the motivation behind that?
It's just another fork of... Well, it was previously a fork of Mandriva.
But why? Right.
I don't know how it differs from Mageia.
Did you see that the Mandriva corporate people that had extended the very kind offer to the Mageia developers to take them under their wing?
No.
And reintegrate them into the Mandriva project?
That's very kind of them.
Very kind of them.
I'm guessing they're not going to accept.
They have declined.
Politely?
Yes, actually.
Oh, that's good.
Because we already have a management structure in place. That's in French, I don't know. There's something about, I don't know, onions.
Wine, bread.
Yeah.
KDE has announced their new partner network. This was part of the original plan with Plasma Active when it was first announced. It was one of the first things I wrote about when I joined Linux Format, actually, for What on Earth.
Oh, right.
But there were all these different elements. It wasn't just the software. They were wanting to bring partners on board to help develop extensions and all kind, you know, just other stuff to go with hardware platforms and whatnot. So I guess it's a further solidification of their plans.
I think it's great.
Yeah, I think we'll wait and see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like most things, KDE and Linux with commercial interests, it's always interesting to see how it actually develops. Anyone else?
Yeah, I mean, I saw it as part of the Vivaldi announcement, and it sort of looked like from their point of view, they're trying to bring developers on board for that. And that's exactly what the platform's going to need if it's going to compete with Android and iOS at some point in the future. Yeah.
I think also they're responding to demand. I mean, I don't imagine they imagined it to be so successful, at least get some kind of online traction, you know. So in a good way, not in a canonical way, like Ubuntu's on your television.
It does seem, yeah, they're not promising the world with this, but it seems like they're putting together efforts to improve hardware integration and to get it in more different platforms and get, you know, third-party businesses involved in what they're doing.
Yeah.
That's what I appreciate. They're not promising the world. It seems a realistic goal. And finally, another hardware-related announcement, that Raspberry Pi has some competition, and it did already have some competition in the form of BeagleBoard and, what was that, USB stick one?
Yeah.
Cotton Candy?
Oh, yeah, you're right, that's it.
Yeah. But now Fire have announced, FIA have announced a new $49 Android-based PC, 800 megahertz ARM 11 CPU, 512 meg of RAM, 2 gigabytes of internal flash memory, HDMI and VGA. It's quite a good specification.
$49.
So it's got more RAM than the Raspberry Pi.
It looks
slightly
bigger
faster
too.
Processor. Mm. It looks bigger. It has VGA, which is quite cool.
I'm not sure if it's got much in the way of graphics acceleration.
No, it can do 720p, whereas the Raspberry Pi can do 1080p.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I mean, the more of these products on the market, the more people get to play with stuff and the more Linux gets used.
I think a really interesting story is that it's Android, because what do you do with Android in a project situation like
know.
This?
That's a big difference, isn't it? That it's Android rather than Linux. It's cutting down its potential developer base.
Yeah.
Although probably with an expanded potential user base if more people are familiar with Android from their phones.
I mean,
that doesn't have the same draw, does it?
No, because, I mean, Android as well, it's all about the touchscreen. It's not like a mouse interaction. You know, when you plug that into a VGA monitor and a keyboard and a mouse, what are you going to get?
You can touch the screen.
You're going to plug it into a touchscreen monitor?
No, just plug it into a normal screen.
And just touch it.
Touch the screen.
Yeah, what's happening?
They could transfer my monitor into a touchscreen. I'd be quite happy for $49.
That is quite a cool... Did you guys see about that announcement of that Microsoft research project that you can... It uses the microphone on your computer to do the sound.
Yeah, I did,
connect.
Yeah.
The speakers and the microphone, so the speakers send out the sound pulse and the microphone detects where your body is based
That's
on...
That's awesome!
Yeah, it's pretty
sort
cool.
Like sonar?
Yeah, basically, but like really bat. Accurate, like Kinect.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's meant to work really well. Anyway, that's cool.
That is cool.
And that is also the end of the news this month, this week, this fortnight.
You saved the best to the last there, John. That's brilliant.
It's kind of old news now. I just thought of it. But yeah, that's cool.
Brilliant. Thanks, John. And now time for the discovery of the fortnight. Does anybody want to go first? Shall I go first?
I think you should go first.
Okay. There's two things. The first thing is I've been doing some diffs on the command line for some reason. And I never knew it. Perhaps everybody knows it, but there's a command called sdiff. Sdiff is a split diff view for the command line.
Cool.
So you actually, rather than trying to decode the output of diff, which is relatively straightforward but difficult when you're trying to remember what's in both files, sdiff shows the contents of both files side by side on the console and shows you exactly what's changed. It's much easier to see because you can visualize both files side by side. Secondly, this morning, trying to look for a discovery, I discovered a new synthesizer called the V1 prototype. I always fall back on synthesizers. This is written by Rui Nuno Capella, who is the guy that wrote QSynth and the QJack control panel, and it's really nice. It's only in the early stages of development, but it sounds great. It's got four oscillators, which is more than most. You know, the classic Moog has three, so it's one better than that. But the way that it actually, you can use those oscillators is really neat. Nobody's interested in this kind of stuff. But you can change the width of triangle and sine waveforms, which I thought was really cool. So if anybody's interested in synths, try it out. Please, someone, pick up the thread.
I have a Linux-related one. I've been trying out Emacs. I learned to use Vim over the last year after someone said that their life is grey without Vim. And so I learned to use Vim. And it was really cool, and I really love the whole idea of a grammar of text editing and stuff like that, you know, so... You know, you want to move forward one word, W. You want to delete one word, DW. It makes sense. Delete three words, D3W. Perfect sense. Anyway, the point is that I
all think John's mad.
Yeah, that too. But I also, I heard about org mode recently in Emacs, and it sounded like a great way to organize to-do lists and text notes and, you know, just scribble down thoughts as they occur to you and plan work and that sort of thing. Well, I'll try Emacs. It's actually quite nice. I like not having to switch modes every time I want to save it or move around the file, and it feels quite liberating not having to press escape all the time.
But wasn't it just yesterday when you were doing some editing in Emacs on one computer and turned to the other chair to do some VI editing on the other, and your brain nearly exploded?
Yeah, it was bad. It was just a complete, I don't even know what the word is, but it was difficult.
Meltdown.
I really, really struggled, so I wouldn't recommend trying to use the two together.
I love the idea that these editors are hardwired into your brain in some way.
It's really weird, but actually I found out that I was using Vim because I was over SSH to a server, but it turns out that Emacs lets you use launch openet files via SSH within it, so you don't even have to SSH in to edit the files. So I'll probably do that next time. Flame me as you will.
I'm beginning to understand why people feel so passionately about Vim and Emacs.
What, seeing
because it, when
yesterday.
It when it's so programmed into your brain like that.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, they both do have their advantages and disadvantages. Vim for shortcuts makes so much more sense, but more logical, and it's more elegant. But then having to escape all the time just to switch modes and change what you're doing to navigate the file or to delete words, and it's awkward, and you don't have that in Emacs. And you've got all these extensions and clever stuff like org mode and automatic table editing and export to HTML and all this kind of amazing stuff that happens in it.
It's cool. I can get around in Vim, but I just can't use it for writing stuff. I've noticed actually that Google Docs has got some simple grammar checking, which is very useful.
Simple grammar?
Just recently it will point out that you've made a mistake if you use there or it's with an apostrophe when it shouldn't have. It doesn't do anything else, but it's actually really useful, just like spell checking is. You know what's correct, but when you're actually typing.
Yeah.
I just need something visual.
Each to their own. I wish they looked better. I wish they'd like there's better line spacing and more margin around the page. And I'd quite like to try it out with a non-monospace font, just to make it more pleasing on your eye. But anyway, enough about my text editing.
Ben?
Okay, on a completely different topic. They've just released the results of the Future of Open Source Survey 2012. And I was having a look through it this morning, and it's quite interesting. I'll just read through a few points that have come out in the press release. The number one is open source is not just fueling innovation, but it's leading it. Important areas of innovation include big data, mobile apps, blah, 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 all buzzwords and that sort of thing. I'll ignore the press release for a second. The top three reasons for using open source software that were given in the survey was it was free from vendor lock-in, it's lower costs and quality. And it's the first time that quality has made the top three list of reasons that companies are using open source software, which I think is a real good sign that the ecosystem's in good shape. And the number one factor influencing the choice of an open source project in industry is the project maturity, which I thought was quite interesting as well. People weren't looking for new trendy projects, they were looking for the old mature ones. And yeah, what might be more interesting to the readers is what aspect of open source experience companies were looking for when they're hiring people. And the number one was...
This is not just interesting to readers.
This is where we all sort of edge forward in our seats and lean forward. Tell us, Ben.
Well, the number one reason companies employ people for open source software is their experience with a variety of projects. And the second one was code contributions. And I was interested it was that way around, because there's been a lot of talk of code as a new CV recently. But it looks like it's a variety that employers are after at the moment.
That makes sense. Ability to transfer from one project to the next, ability to, you know, grasp new ways of working and things.
Yeah. And just on one final note, they talked about the investments companies had made in open source software. And that was up by 200 million over last year, up to now $670 million
spent a year That's really
on open
cool.
source software. And they reckoned that in 5 years' time, 50% of all software will be open source.
Cool.
That's brilliant. That's really good. That's really good.
Some of the stuff you said in that, especially about quality, I suppose it's not surprising, but this last week I've been talking to Jim Whitehurst from Red Hat for next month's
cover story. From Red Hat.
The CEO of Red Hat. Anyway.
Some guy who works at Red Hat.
Yeah, I know, someone. Anyway, he was telling me that customers say exactly the same to them. They're not going open source because of the price. They're doing it entirely because of the quality. That's why they said their customers are choosing them. So that does seem to chime well with the results.
Yeah.
It just feels good, doesn't it? I think, you know, it's the reason why we all like free software.
Yeah.
The fact that it's open. It's the same with security. You know, you can choose to hide yourself away in a box somewhere and ignore whatever the perils are, or you can actually face it, you know, put your hand in the box. And that's what free software is for software development.
Yeah. Actually, and just one other thing that I forgot to mention is that 21% of companies surveyed claimed they were actually contributing to open source software.
Yeah.
So not just using it, but
that is cool.
Putting back. Although that probably does reflect the type of companies that they surveyed.
Yeah.
Rather than
I mean, it's very difficult here, for example, to even if you can persuade them to start using free software, it's very difficult to then try and persuade people who aren't used to the idea that it's great to make some kind of contribution or not keep your own development secret.
Yeah.
20%. I'm not 100% familiar with this, but again, while researching this article, this is where my head has been for the last 2 weeks. But the Pareto principle. Is it the Pareto principle?
So how many copies are pirated?
No, something like 20% of people, contributors, or 20% of time, do 80% of the work. So 20% is an interesting number, but that comes up there as well.
Mm.
That was from Michael Tierman, that little tidbit.
Is a Pareto equilibrium, is that one where you can't make somebody better off without making somebody else worse off?
I'm not sure. I only briefly read the Wikipedia page.
Oh, God. It was first year economics, so I would have learned this in 1998. It's a long time ago.
Anyway, Pareto is a really interesting topic. And it's interesting that 21% of companies are contributing.
Brilliant discovery, Ben. Thanks.
Thanks, Ben.
Andrew?
I have two discoveries. Cool. I have many discoveries. First discovery is obviously, regular listeners will be aware that my laptop has been fixed.
You got
a new version of Windows, and obviously that meant that I put a new version of Linux Mint on there. But this time, I thought I'd go for 64-bit, just to see.
Yeah,
you know, and it's more or less the same. but the webcam works now.
Oh.
So while I was installing it, it says, you know, oh, choose your login name and here's this photograph that you want to appear with the login screen. And it was a picture of me.
Picking your nose.
It was me in a very unflattering pose looking back at myself. I got quite a fright. Anyway, that's discovery number one. Discovery number two is the awesome online non-immigrant visa application, DS-160.
Are you allowed to talk about that?
I'm just going to risk it. Which is kindly brought to us by the US Department of State's consular service.
I've never applied for a visa before. I've always been to like happy, friendly places like Serbia, where they just let you in. But no, you need to know all sorts of information, to like passport number, obviously that's fine, name and address and all that, and then to weed out the wrong uns trying to get into the US, they have a few cunning questions in there. Now, a couple of examples of which are, do you seek to engage in terrorist activities while in the United States, or have you ever engaged in terrorist activities? And it's just a tick box, yes or no. So I can't.
You can't. Doesn't give you space to explain.
You can't fudge it.
If yes, that was a mistake. Please reveal your plan plot to us now.
No, you can't say things like, yes, but we won, so retrospectively, I am a freedom fighter rather than a terrorist. Have you committed, ordered, incited, assisted, or otherwise participated in genocide, torture, extrajudicial killings? These are all yes or no. Have you ever engaged in the recruitment or use of child soldiers? This is another one. Have you, while serving as a government official, been responsible for or directly carried out at any time particularly severe violations of religious freedom? How are you defining particularly severe?
I guess if they don't die.
It's just like, what? I punched someone in the face for having a different religion to me, but I felt that was quite moderate. So it's fine, so I'm allowed in.
So do you think we've ever caught out someone from this? You know, like, how many terrorists have gone to the US and ticked the wrong box just and got arrested at the airport?
Oh, no.
Yeah, you know, we just sent it off and like, oh, nuts, what did I do that for?
Well, the thing that, I mean, obviously it's a bit chuckle-worthy, but the odd thing for me is that it's obviously a question, are you a terrorist, isn't designed to catch terrorists. It's on there for some other purpose, and I think it's just so that someone can cover their arse in the event that somebody gets into the United States and blows something up.
Well, we asked them. We say, it wasn't our fault, we tried.
Somebody at the Department of State can go, well, you know, I checked. It's not my fault. Which is a bit worrying. I'd like to... Just to recap, I'm not a terrorist or have engaged in any genocide or child soldiers or any of that.
You guys are going to have fun when you travel through immigration next, though.
Yeah.
Yes. Looking forward to that after a long flight.
Yeah, that's the discoveries.
Brilliant. Thanks, Andrew. They were our discoveries.
That brings us japerly to the halfway reminder, where I remind you that we're halfway through the podcast and we still have Rants and Raves, Speak Your Brains and Open Ballot to come.
Okay, so it's time for Rants and Raves, and in a change to our usual format, Andrew is going to rant and rave. And I think, first of all, ranting about Windows 7.
Mm.
Yeah, cool. So with 1 minute to go, do you want 1 minute or do you want to do like 30 seconds for each?
Let's do it. Let's have a minute.
Okay, go for it. Ready? And
I can always pad. Oh, what was that about padding? No, I would never do that. So the rant is, as regular listeners will know, that my laptop was broken and then PC World installed Windows 7 on it, and the rant is that Windows 7 is just terrible. If you're not used to it, if you're not used to that mindset of proprietary software, it's such a shock, it's such a jar to go back to trying to find an application to like to make an ISO and then find out that you have to go looking for it, and then you have to maybe download a 30-day trial version, so you have to give your credit card details and just terrible things like that. And then maybe you don't want to do that, so you have to go looking for something else. There's no software center, there's no freedom. Like you just get the shell, the very bare bones of the operating system, with loads of crap that you don't even need, like photo management apps and like and then stop with all the pop-ups. Your computer is at risk. My computer isn't at risk. It's not attached to the internet yet. I've not downloaded any stuff that I want to get.
Stop. You're getting faster. I can see you getting faster in like the last 10 seconds here.
Who knows where we would have gone to?
Yeah.
Who knows?
I should have kept going.
Wormhole opens up in the middle of the room.
Cool. Well.
It's rubbish, though.
It is
just
rubbish.
Things popping, really intrusive things popping up all the time. You switch it on to check something and then switch it back off, and it's, Windows is collecting essential updates. It's not, because the router isn't turned on. So what is it doing? I don't know. It's just chugging away.
doing stuff that I don't understand. It's just, there's a lack of transparency.
The minute finished a while ago. Listeners, you now get to enjoy Andrew raving about... we'll find out. Ready? Have you recomposed yourself after that? You're feeling more positive again?
I am cool.
Yeah? Okay, ready? Go.
In contrast to that, Linux offers openness and happy, smiling faces. You don't need to waste time looking for stuff because it's already there. Even if you have like a relatively small distro, such as, I don't know, Ubuntu is a classic example because it fits on the one CD. That was their aim. Like, there's still so much stuff on there, so much software on there, that if you were to pay for the proprietary equivalent on Windows or OS X, you would you'd end up spending a squillion pounds. There's there's a full graphics package in there. Is it? Have they put GIMP back in now? Anyway, it's in there in Mint anyway, which is what I use. There's 3D stuff. There's drop shadows and funky things. There's an office suite that you can actually do proper real work on, LibreOffice. It's there for free. Even OpenOffice, which is old. I mean, that's still pretty cool. Hang on. Whoa, no, don't wave that timer. The timer. No, the timer.
Stop. It's okay. You're safe.
I am right, though.
You are right, yeah. About both, on both of
on
those.
On both counts.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, I don't so much mind OS X because it makes sense. The way that it works makes sense to me. But
and they've introduced their equivalent of a software center to OS X.
Huh?
In the new versions, haven't they?
Yeah, there's the App Store.
Yeah, is it any good?
It's all right, I suppose, because updates happen in the background and the prices are generally much cheaper than they are in other places, but also it's becoming a walled garden on your desktop PC, even more so as Snow Winter Lion, Mountain Lion comes out, because they're going to run applications in a sandbox.
Right.
Which is completely, and it's the complete antithesis of what I think of a desktop computer to be, or a laptop, or a general purpose PC.
Yeah.
I can understand why they're doing it, but is there such a problem with stability on OS X? I don't know. It sounds more like Apple wanting to control the whole ecosystem again.
Yeah.
So no, not a good thing on the way they're doing it. Okay. But Windows has got one as well, hasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, with Metro and Windows 8. Mm-hmm. Will that make you happier, Andrew?
Probably not.
No? Sounded like there's a lot of other bad stuff going on as well.
I'm not going to try. Windows 8, this is the desktop version, you mean?
Yeah.
Actually, the last 10 seconds that I spent just flapping about, can I have those back?
Yeah, go for it. Okay, or just rewind.
It's 1 o'clock.
Oh no, it's 1 o'clock. Anyway, I just wanted to say that since moving to pay-as-you-go rather than having a contract phone, I've spent £10 in 3 months on my phone.
Cool.
I win.
Congratulations.
Okay, thanks, everyone. I keep saying that. It's now Speak Your Brains. I've only had one contribution to Speak Your Brains, which isn't a bad thing, actually, because it's an audio file. I haven't actually listened to it, so if there's any swearing in it, I will cut it out afterwards. But I'm going to try and play it into the microphone from here. It's from Ruben Gonzalez, and he sent us an MP4 video, incidentally, that I couldn't get to work. But the OG worked. Hopefully it will work live now as I perform the DJ actions.
Hello, Tux Radar Podcast. And today I'm contacting you to speak my brains over the Ubuntu crates, the Ubuntu 12.04 release. And what do I have to say? Well, first of all, usability is great, speed is great, and also the upgrade process was error-free. And that is one thing I really liked. Also, retained all my user data, including my virtual image of Windows XP, since I had to use Windows XP every so often for a program here and there. But usability-wise, Unity has been greatly fixed, especially since 11.10, 11.4 were very poor implementations of Unity. But now it seems that Canonical is putting the can in Canonical, for it's finally upping up their game. And Ubuntu 12.04 seems like an excellent operating system that I plan to put on several people's computers. So, that's mainly all I have to say about Ubuntu 12.04's release. And I hope everyone is doing well. And I wanted to just say one last thing, which is, I miss Mike Saunders. And that's the last thing I have to say. So, take care, Tux Radio Podcast.
Awesome. We all miss Mike. Hello. Yes, you've got to stop. Stop now. Stop. That was brilliant. Thanks, Ruben. Nice overview, review of Ubuntu, and we all looked at each other in love when he said he'd be putting the can in canonical. if you want to speak your brains next episode, please send me one.
Or, you know, send more recordings to Ransom Rave so that Andrew doesn't have to do it twice again. That's true.
I guess it's time for open ballot. Which we'll get through quickly because it's now lunchtime and we're all hungry, apart from John, who's still full of flapjack.
And it will be quick because there weren't that many comments.
There weren't. There were only 17 at the time that I printed this out. And then the next one after that was a rant. It was someone getting quite angry, so I left that off. I think any comment that includes the phrase circle jerk deserves to be gently ignored. So, the question was, does Mozilla think that desktop Linux is dead? Because Mozilla isn't including Linux in the platforms that will get initial support for its new web applications feature. And the reason that Mozilla has given for this is that it needs to focus on the platforms which provides the bulk of its users, ergo revenue, and those are Windows and Mac OS X. So is this a harbinger of doom for Linux on the desktop? Does it mean that even Mozilla, which provided the poster child of open source software for such a long time, now that they've have they spurned us, and are we doomed to sit in lonely wooden towers waiting for Suzanne and her tea and oranges? Paul. Paul Gideon Dan kicks us off with how do we define the success of Linux on the desktop? Microsoft pretty much has a monopoly on the OEMs. So I'm not holding my breath for Linux on everyone's desktop by default. However, Linux already has some very good adoption in many academic, governments and education institutions. He also reckons that you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody under 35 with a more than average interest in technology who hasn't at least heard of Linux. I reckon that's probably true. Arthur Warther, not verified, says, I don't really care what other people think. I like using Linux on my desktop. I suppose the danger is that we would no longer have a web browser that is up-to-date enough to do things like internet shopping and banking. But fortunately, there are enough people using Linux to make sure that will happen. That will not happen. There's a not missing there. That's, I think, probably my favourite point. I don't care what other people think. I like using Linux on my desktop. Now, it doesn't have to be the year of Linux on the desktop for everybody, as long as you're happy.
I think there's two points taken together. As long as enough people keep using it, that it keeps getting developed and keeps recent and useful, then that's all that really matters.
Bob the Linux hacker makes a sexist comment. He says, calm down, dears.
Is that just like our Prime Minister?
Just like the beloved father of our great democracy. When he said it.
Tony Benn.
Michael Winner.
Down with sexism. My favourite sexism is that's just been made up. That's the best sexism. Anyway, what he says, or she, I don't know, is that the article doesn't say that Mozilla is backpedalling on Firefox and Linux. What it actually says is that us Linux folks aren't going to get web apps store initially. Personally, I don't see that as being a big deal. I want Firefox to get smaller, faster, and more secure. And fancy web apps are a great way of making the browser slower, fatter, and more crackable. Or hackable. That said, granted, Apple has a larger share of the Linux desktop in the US than it does in the UK. Willing to bet that there are more Linux users than OS X brethren. It's about tapping into the money that Mac and Windows users spend on
it
apps.
Is. And I'd expect that of almost anybody else, but I do think that Mozilla's got an obligation to keep Linux as a first-class citizen, a first-class part of its ecosystem. Otherwise, I'm just going to switch to Chrome.
The thing is, we're all talking about Mozilla like it's a Facebook, it's a faceless corporation, unlike Facebook. But it's not. It's a community. If Linux users want to get this support, then they can get on there and help develop it.
That's true. That's true.
We shouldn't just sit here and say, oh, you need to do this for us. The whole point of Linux is that we all get together, we develop, whatever we do.
But at the same time, you know, Mozilla do have significant financial resources and they spend a lot of money developing the browser. As one of the comments further down in the original story that I linked to says, is, and I think it's a Mozilla person saying this, but they think, you know, some people in Mozilla think this is really bad because they should be supporting Linux because it's the platform that shares their values of openness and,
yeah,
you know, that's why they should be supporting them, even if there's not the same level of user, there's not the same user base there.
Yeah, and I agree with that. You know, Mozilla isn't in a standard commercial fight for market dominance. It's actually, it's supposed to be a representative, and it has been a wonderful representative of the open source free software development community. It's not that big a deal. But I think combined with lots of other things, I'm getting the feeling that Mozilla is getting a little bit out of touch.
My big worry about Mozilla is that to continue being such a useful part of the open source ecosystem, they need revenue. And as their browser share shrinks because of Chrome and stuff, they do need to fight to keep the revenue there to continue being relevant and make an impact.
Is their browser share actually shrinking?
It's been shrinking since 2009.
The point about Mozilla being more than just a company, being a collection of lovely, fluffy individuals, is echoed by Torwag, who says, "I have the feeling that Mozilla moved away from being a group of enthusiastic developers into a giant, we want to do money with this thing, corporation. Seeing their crazy release cycles and recent decisions all points towards a big change in management, especially in management strategies." And goes on to say that it seems that projects which gain a lot of attention in the Microsoft Windows or OS X world seem to be compromised much faster. At one point or other, some of these uber-smart business people appear and claim that they can make money out of what was a project of fun and joy before. And the last point, Brian36 says, the bottom line is, how can we make a buck out of this? In business terms, you have to put your resources into what will make the best return for your investment. That's the capitalist view. For me, I will use whatever is convenient and available. Firefox is still the business for me, but for how long? How long indeed before we all switch to Chrome with its multi-threading tabs and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Even though it doesn't do the Google Doodles properly.
Not on Linux. And it's becoming the only platform with Flash running on it.
I think it makes sort of, I don't really care if there's an app store missing from Firefox, because I don't buy anything anyway.
I mean, there is all these sort of various technological and political reasons for picking one over the other. But it comes down to the fact that I generally use Chrome just because I prefer to have my tabs, you know, a centimetre higher up the screen. I probably should have a better reason for using it than that.
Well, at the time it was quicker. It felt significantly quicker. It's kind of lost that advantage, but I've stuck with Chrome. Mostly. I still use Firefox sometimes. Right, well, we'll call it a day at that point because we're all hungry. And the sun's just coming out. So I don't think we've got one more thing, have we?
Nah.
No, Mike's not here.
Thanks to Didier Drogba for carrying the Olympic torch through Swindon.
And William.
And William for his proud links to Taunton.
Yes.
Yes, we've all been enjoying the build-up to the Olympics, sponsored by Samsung and other people.
Lloyd's TSB.
If you're in the US or elsewhere in the world right now, the UK is just so excited and so enthusiastic about the way our tax money is being spent on the Olympics. In fact, we just can't wait.
Apparently, since the last Olympics, £26 million of public funds has been spent on rowing in the UK.
Rowing.
Maybe sailing, actually. Some water-based thing.
Anyway, I'll probably cut all that. But thanks for listening. Other pleasantries. And that's it.
Bye.
Ciao.
Bye. It's such a nice day to be.